Hey, this is Nick Vatterott. You're listening to the Rock Paper Podcast. I'm supposed to say something funny. Something funny. God, that was terrible. Please use this take.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
Welcome to Rock Paper Podcast, episode 37. My name is Chris.
I'm Shane Presley.
By the time this drops, it'll probably be Christmas or close to Christmas Day if you celebrate Christmas. If not, that's cool too for the Jewish people, all that good stuff. But happy holidays regardless. Do you get yelled at by people for saying happy holidays still? They don't say Merry Christmas. Like, say Merry Christmas.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, some people, they take it way too seriously. I don't get it. I mean, I'll say Merry Christmas. I say happy holidays. But I don't want to.
You're acknowledging. That's all that matters.
I don't. You know, none of us come off as insensitive in any sort or whatever. It's just a saying.
Anyway, happy holidays for everybody who listens. Long story short. So our guest this week, been chatting with him here a little bit before we started. You seem like a funny guy. Anybody? It's
happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
That's the one I say.
Nick Vatterott here. So has anybody you think ever been like, he's a really funny guy and it's a comedian? Like, whatever. Anybody ever like open up a show, be like, so this guy's not very funny, but he's a comedian, so, you know, here he is, this guy. But
I bet it's happened and not...
Actually, not saying someone's funny is often the comedian takes it as them saying that they're not funny.
Right.
You know, like, hey, we got a... it's like after a show. You ever have like a guy after the show, and you know he did a set, and you just say hi, and you don't say good set.
You just want to hear like, man, that was really good. Good job, man.
Show. That was a good show had.
You look like you were really happy. I like your shirt.
What did you think of it?
Right.
What did you think of what was going on?
Yeah, did you do good? Oh, jeez.
I liked you.
I enjoyed the
all those passive aggressive things.
Yeah.
And then the comics go just get in their head. My roommate, Robert Dean, was talking about how like somebody told him, they saw his set, and I was like, yeah, man, it was good. And he was like, and he got into his head about like, good, why wasn't it great?
Yeah.
What's great? What's good? What does that mean?
I know I should have said this bit, and I didn't do this one, and then he just...
I would have gotten the great compliment.
Yeah, just for the rest of his life's ruined, because he's just that one little...
good instead of great. Comment.
Yeah. So, thanks for coming on and hanging out. Now, you're from... We're obviously in St. Louis. You're from Brooklyn, right? Well, you're from St. Louis, but you're living in New York.
I was born in Brooklyn. I crawled to St. Louis, and I raised myself there.
How long
I found a family. I snuck into their house. I go, take me.
The traditional, you know, the orphan story. You're like the modern-day Annie, essentially.
The modern-day. You know, they're remaking the Annie, and it's a little black Annie now, which is great. But there is, like, I think it's awesome. But there is funny, like, I sort of still wish she had orange hair.
I was going to say, what happened if they would have given her orange hair?
Given her red hair anyway, you know?
She was like, she's great in the part.
It's so funny, it's like, the red hair was such a definitive aspect of that character.
Curly orange hair, red hair.
And it's like, well, we can make it just an old dude.
Yeah.
Give him red hair. Let's make it a story for everyone, know? That everybody can have
Jamie Foxx plays Annie with red curly hair.
The whole cast take turns.
Do like Eddie Murphy and... what was it? A Nutty Professor and
Fox just plays all the characters.
So this is really awkward. I don't want to watch this anymore. I'm done. I'm going to go watch Ninja Turtles.
Did you catch SNL when they did a parody of the Black Annie?
Oh, what they do?
I don't know if you this season they got that Leslie Jones on the show.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And she so she was Black Annie, and that was the whole thing. Like, there was a bunch of little kids there, but like she was like in the orphanage, like as in a grown woman. And. And then there was a girl that's supposed to be the Cameron Diaz character.
Oh, right.
I forget the...
The bitch.
Yeah, right, yeah. That's just what it says on the script.
The real...
The bitch.
Yeah, the family comes to a doctor and she's like, yo, I'm Black Annie, take me home.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, it was really good.
I like that, like, we finally hit a point in society where we, like... Even like classic roles that have been a certain ethnicity or whatever, we're like, we don't have to do it. Like, it never occurred to us before that you didn't have to do that. Like, Watson. I think Watson's like an Asian woman.
Yeah.
And then I'm not even joking. That's right.
That's
awesome.
Yeah. We're getting with the times. We can just anybody can be anybody.
Anybody can be anybody, man. Let's recast everything. Let's make Alf a parrot.
Right.
Let's recast Alf as some parrot.
Or what? Like they put Seth Rogen as like the Green Lantern and stuff like
that. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right. He was a was he an Asian dude? The old Green Lantern? Or no, I'm thinking not the Green Lantern. Hornet.
Oh, right, Hornet. Yeah, Green Hornet. Yeah, that's right. Sorry.
And
yeah.
then just like, who's the Pirates of the Caribbean guy? What's his name? Actor guy.
Johnny Depp.
Johnny Depp. Wasn't he like an Indian in
Lone Ranger? See, but that's where it's like, I like the progression of that we don't have to like, but then like when the white people are like, well, let's make them all white.
Yeah, right, like right. That. Something with
yeah, like how many Indian actors are out there or Native American actors are out there? They're being like, God, I'm that guy. Why are you getting Johnny Depp for?
Yeah. Jesus Christ. Same thing with Jake Gyllenhaal when he was in that video game movie, and I can't think of what it was, but he's like Prince of Persia. And
they're like, okay, yeah.
He's a white guy. Yeah, why is he not even Persian? Just, okay.
The one Persian actor.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, there's so few roles for Persian men.
Yeah.
And they finally make one. They cast Gyllenhaal.
The dude can actually do like backflips and stuff. And they're like, well, but Jake Gyllenhaal is kind of a more recognizable name, so we're going to go with him because that.
Oh, awesome.
Or what if there's like a guy who really is Superman and he keeps losing the part to all these other...
He can't get the role because he has like a mole on his
face. Yeah, it's like, come on, I can shoot... Actually, I think that's an old Saturday Night Live sketch. They did something like that once where the guy...
The actual guy who should be the part.
Yeah, he actually was Superman. He could shoot lasers out of his eyes and stuff like that. And then I think the bit ended that he didn't do the role because he had an Ivory Soap callback. So he didn't do Superman because of that.
That's hilarious. Jeez. So you had the album that came out. Is it a comedy? It's called an album, right? Like, I don't want to just say that to you.
Honestly, album is the safest term to use.
Yeah.
For amusement only. It's on Comedy Central Records. It's not a record. It's not a CD.
Comedy Central, like, we should call it records.
Yeah, because back then, it was back in 1945 when they started.
You would hold your cane. Let me hold it up.
Yeah, hey, please hold this for me. hold on my... most of my asleep. Talk will be grumbling. So there's no, you know, it's like, it's weird because like on the CD or on the album, I talk about the album. But I call it a CD the whole time.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, you know, it's good. You know, it's good to be here at Chicago Underground Comedy, you know, recording my CD here and doing all that stuff. I call it a CD multiple times. And then I found out later that we weren't making CDs. So it was a farce.
So
it was a prank. I got you. I tricked all of you.
The trust was just diminished. As soon as I can't listen to another word this guy says. Because
he said it's a CD.
I can't. This is horrible.
I guess like no one's buying CDs anymore. And like it's sort of like the past couple of years, like all these comics, they make CDs and then they go out and just they have a suitcase of these CDs that just slowly start cracking in their suitcase and nobody it's like you go to a buddy's house, it's like find his boxes of CDs that he has under his bed or that nobody buys them now.
I feel like though, like that's especially for comedians, you know, like that's one of the only things, like I mean, yeah, you can plug, hey, go buy my album on iTunes, but like that's sort of been always the thing where people, you know, you have a table set up outside, and people grab a CD on the way out, and when they're drunk, they'll hand you a $10 bill or whatever. And it was a good way to make some money to get around. And but yeah, like I know the whole industry. We just had a discussion last week about how the industry like has totally changed, all digital and things. But there's still guys like I know I'm a big fan of Matt Bronger and he's still doing his on vinyl.
He does vinyls,
and stuff like that.
Canadian vinyls. I mean, a lot of people doing vinyls.
So, you should do yours on tape.
I do want to do my cassette tape. Phonograph. We're gonna date my baby. Hey, let me go to Starbucks. Oh girl. I don't know what that is.
Yeah. I like it.
It's it's on. It is weird, you know, so it's on iTunes, it's on Amazon, it's all that stuff. I mean, and I guess on the, like, the, you know,
you do. Yeah, you're right. You to have that table set up and yeah. have sort of people kind of drunk and fresh out of just seeing you, and also more so than that, a lot of people, they want a piece of something to take with them. Yeah. You know, it's
souvenirs.
More than just a memory. Sure. Something, you know, souvenirs are something that triggers a memory later on. Down. Well, that was a fun night, or for yourself to be like, oh, I wonder what he's up to now. I'm like, yeah, and see what you're doing down the line. And
now it's just the selfie.
You get the selfie, which is Jesus, it's so stupid. And to tell people to be like, hey, go home and buy this.
Right.
By the time they get home, they're not thinking about it. You know, they're not drunk anymore.
What was that guy's name?
I mean, nobody. So many people. Dude, I went and saw a comedy last week. This dude's hilarious. Funniest dude I ever saw. What was his name? You know, I don't know. I don't remember.
He's that guy. You know, he's the guy in.
He was in the.
So that one guy that was a human. Right.
Human, yeah.
Yeah, you're on. Okay,
yeah. Yeah. So definitely you maybe
him,
a human.
Right? Yeah, I don't know.
Of some sort. Or he was a parrot.
He could have been a parrot. And it was Alf. So.
Yeah.
Long story short. Yeah.
Some people, I asked, you know, I told people after a show once, you know, because I did talk to my buddies. Like, once, you know, like, I heard that we wouldn't be making an actual CD, I talked to buddies. I was like, you know, I'm sort of bummed out about this. But they're like, I don't know, man. No one buys them, you know. Yeah. Nobody buys them after shows. I just sit there looking stupid. And so I said to a show once, I was like, hey, does anybody, you know, I have an album coming out soon. Check it out. There's not going to be a CD. And then, you know, I just started talking. Because I wanted to talk. I just found out that day. I kind of talked about it on stage. And there was, like, one woman came up and she was like, there really won't be a CD? I was like, I don't think so. And she was like, oh, because I don't know how to use iTunes or a computer. And I was like, there is... You know, there is this idea of, like, they're not making CDs in cars anymore. A lot of laptops, you can't even put a CD in anymore.
The one here doesn't have a CD drive at all.
It's so crazy.
I tried. He gave me a CD the other day, or I think I can't remember what it was, and I was like, okay, yeah, because we were going to put a song on for one of the episodes. And I'm like, so I can't put this anywhere in my computer.
That's so weird. I mean, it doesn't even have
nothing.
You can't put a DVD in there even or anything.
No.
But we are selling, like, I have, like, these download cards.
Yeah.
You know,
right,
so
like
you can sign, it's a little, and this guy Joe Karg, a comedian out of Atlanta, made this super awesome album art. And it was sort of a bummer that we didn't have a CD, because his album art was so, I thought it was so great what he made, you know. We did make so now I feel like what's going to happen is there's going to be alternative ways to sell stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So, like, one thing we made was, and this was actually totally Comedy Central's idea, a flip book. And basically, it's just this. When I was, so the album is for amusement only.
Mm-hmm.
And then Joe Karg was like, what do you want for your album? And I was like, for amusement only. He's like, I'm a big pinball fan. I was like, I think it'd be really fun to have, like, a pinball, you know, like, sort of themed album, right? And we were kind of going back and forth, and I was like, what if it was like, what if, like, my head's busting through the table and my hands are the flippers and I'm just smacking the balls into my own face like that, just crazy. And he sent something back and I was like, but what I was thinking was so fucking crazy. I was like, you know what? The only way I can communicate exactly what I'm thinking is I took this big piece of paper. I drew, like, a, you know, like, a scale size, like, pinball machine on a long sheet of paper. And then I cut a hole in the middle, and I made a sort of a video of me busting my head through the middle of this pinball table. I put my hands in flippers, and I made a short little video of just sort of what I was picturing, right?
Yeah.
So I sent it to Joe just as an idea of, like, this is what I'm
this
picturing.
Is kind of
And he's like, it's hilarious that you did this. And so, and I actually just sent it to Comedy Central too in an email just because I thought it'd be funny. I was like, just by the way, this is where we're at with the album art. And I sent this to him. It's sort of funny looking, you know?
Yeah.
And I kind of forgot about it. And then, like, 3 months later, when we were getting down to, like, release, they were like, hey, remember that tiny video you sent? Like, that 6-second video you sent? Like, what if we turn that into a flip book? And they made it into this flip book. I have it upstairs. Should I grab it? I don't know. I want to show it to you guys before we leave.
But, all right, yeah, I'll check it.
But it's hilarious. It's just, and you just, and then it has, like, the download card on the back, or it's got the download information on the back.
Yeah. You know?
And I think that's, like, what might wind up happening is, like, people find, like, a cool thing to sell. Like, I saw Ari Shaffir. My roommate had something of his. I think it was like a weed grinder, maybe, or, like, you know, I don't know the story behind it, but I mean, like, that could easily, you could easily, like, sell, like, fun. Yeah. You could sell e-vape pens, you know, that have like a download. Anything that just has like the download thing attached to it, you could sell just really ridiculous stuff. I always even think it'd be funny to go. I wanted to buy like a bunch of ridiculous objects, like go to a garage sale and just buy a bunch of dumb stuff and just set up like a garage sale type thing, and you just get a download code with this old soccer ball or one left shoe or just ridiculous stuff, you know? Maybe I'll just sell weed after shows. Just I don't care, you know? With this joint, you get a download card. You got to put it in and then smoke it like Inspector Gadget style. So
the smoke
can.
Comes out, you see the code. You're good. There you go.
That'd be hilarious.
Yeah. Well, I love my favorite thing about the album is I love the commentary, like the bit where every once in a while you have the album commentary. Commentary like that, and the way you incorporate it into the show, like it'll just kind of come out of nowhere. And there's a bit about like the elephant, the GPS, you know, and like the elephant voice. And at first I was like, I don't know where he's going with this. And then the commentary comes on and goes, I don't know if anybody's actually talking about it. I'm like, that is hilarious. Yeah. And I love how just the different moments like come out because you're not expecting it. And just the way you correlate into the show is hilarious. I love it.
It's so funny. Like, there was so, you know, it's like, oh man, you get like these jokes that you like doing sometimes. And a lot of times they're like jokes that even, you know, even if they, a lot of times they'll go well in like an alt room or, you know, or maybe a more of a comedy savvy room, you know, but then you do it in like a comedy club, like a mainstream room, and they just sort of stare at you like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And like sort of take some of those jokes and just kind of get, there's so many jokes that like I would do and I go, I know they're just gonna stare at me and they're just gonna be like, what are they, you know, and be like kind of like, you know, you have to show you're sort of bitching about it. It's like, I fucking know that joke's hilarious. I know it's super funny, and they're just staring at me like, what is he doing up there?
Right.
And then have that same reaction three nights through and go, you know what, I'm just gonna call out that's how it's gonna react and just put that in the fucking pre-recorded thing and be like, you know, right now you guys don't know what's happening. You know, and then they, I don't know, I think it's sort of like, I think like a reason a lot of that, like, you know, especially that elephant joke is, it might be a little insider, you know, it might be a little kind of like for you know, people who watch a lot of comedy, you know?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times you do stuff for a comedy savvy room that doesn't, that, you know, that they enjoy, but you do it in like a club of like just regular people that don't see a lot of comedy and it doesn't work and you go, fuck them, you know?
Right.
But I don't know if it's entirely their fault, you know? Like, they like stuff that they can relate to a lot more. And I think, like, comedy audiences can relate to a lot of abstract, absurdist stuff only because they can relate to the nuances in comedy or, you know?
Yeah.
As opposed to if you do, like, a very abstract, absurd thing in a real room, they're like, I can't relate to that in any way.
Yeah.
You know, I can relate to merging on the highway or, you know, the frustration with lines at the TSA airport or whatever. But when you make up a scenario and then make a joke about a thing you made up, I can't attach myself to that at all. But then when you call out that they can't attach themselves to it, now they can attach themselves to that feeling. Right. And maybe you can get people on board with that.
Yeah, because it's almost, I mean, in some parts, like I said, like I was listening to it, like, where's he going with this? And then you come back and you exactly that. You're like, I don't know if anyone's really talked to an elephant or something. I'm like, oh, exactly. It's not so much that you didn't know where you're going, but it's just the fact that you brought it all together and it just worked perfectly. Right. Like, just you do that with these commentaries, just hilarious. And even when it's just like, it's almost like sometimes the joke can be like meaningfully kind of not on par because you're setting up for the commentary to be like, I know that wasn't great. I just wanted to, to try it out or something. And I think it's great. Like, that was probably one of my favorite things. I was excited for when the commentary would come in because I'm just like, you killed it every time.
Oh, well, thanks, man.
It's fun to fuck around like that, too, you know?
You should just go and do, like, a commentary for DVDs that, like, you're not even in the movie, but just do, like, a...
Mystery Science.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what they did, but that'd be hilarious. Just random voice come on and be like, yeah, you don't know who I am, but this is what I'm thinking here. Dark Knight, when Bane comes in, they're like...
That'd be hilarious, man. So, I did see this comic. I don't know his name, but he was from the UK, and I was at Montreal Comedy Festival a few years ago. I can't wait. I'm sorry. I'm blanking on his name, but he did a bit where he went into, like, I don't know how much of this is true, but he went into, like, movie stores and would take a DVD out and replace it with another DVD. So he went and, like, he did something like with March of the Penguins, where he took out March of the Penguins and then he replaced it with just these tiny little, like a tiny little cartoon that he made that's 6 seconds long. You know, so people buy it and they go, that was the whole movie.
That was it.
Marching. But that'd be hilarious to go in and just
mess with people who aren't paying enough attention to realize that this is March of the Penguins, man. Come on, pay attention.
Dude, director's commentary over March of the Penguins, like, these fucking dumbass penguins. So these two penguins were fucking,
these penguins
fucking
were
mad.
Like, dude.
Like, hella fucking.
They weren't happy at all, dude. Seriously.
They kind of did that. They, well, not to ruin your idea, but they kind of did that Farce of the Penguins. Did you ever catch that?
No. What's that?
Yeah, it's like, I think Bob Saget voices over it.
Did he really?
And then,
that's
but it's got like a bunch of like all the penguins are like voiced by different other comedians. And so like they
use the March of the Penguins footage?
They took like the B-roll footage of March of the Penguins. So it's like all this extra footage of just penguins walking around. And then they added like character voices to them.
That's
all.
That's great.
So they had a lot of big comedians. I can't think of the names of them right now. But yeah, I remember Saget was like the commentator instead of Morgan Freeman.
That's great.
So Saget's throwing all kinds of...
And he's so like dirty too with all... I could imagine what all...
So yeah, there's your homework. Check that one out.
I'll check that one. That's so funny. Yeah, Saget like gets so dirty because he that's a guy who wants to distance himself from the Full House guy.
Right, exactly.
Although everyone says that's what he was like before that ever happened too.
Yeah, I've heard him say that like on set he was pretty like crazy or, you know, dirty. But like I think that's what... That almost helped his stand-up because he was so clean and squeaky on that show that for him to be so outright just unbelievably dirty that, like, it just even more so helped him because it's just like, that's Mr. Tanner. Why is he saying
that's
that?
That's one of my favorite lines he does is he says his pickup line is, hey, you want to see Danny Tanner's wiener?
But he's still, like, I've watched the stand-up, and, like, yeah, some people are like, oh, it's just, he's just trying to be dirty or shock factor or whatever, but, like, he does do this pretty good stand-up, though. Like, I enjoy it. I mean, even if it's...
Yeah, he's got that story about that car wreck that happens.
Oh, when him and John, it's him and John Stamos?
Yeah, him and John Stamos, there's a car wreck in the LA freeway, and they go over, the helpless woman, she comes to, and she was like... Uncle Jesse, Danny Tanner, you know, like, what are you doing?
Really imagine what
it's
like,
so funny.
The surrealness of me, like, I don't know if I'm dead or what happened here.
Dude, we got to meet. We met that dude, John Stamos, when we were working on a mashup for, you know, like Comedy Central. You know, he was like the nicest fucking dude. It's like he came in and he came in for the shoot day and was just like. Everybody was instantly like charmed by him, you know, when he just went and like, I think he had some bit too where he was like a pilot or had a pilot, you know, so he's just walk around. John Stamos was a pilot, just walk around charming everybody up, went up, did his lines, killed it, crushed it. Everyone was like kids, like, like you never think about John Stamos, you know, you never think of until like the guy comes in and then just charms the pants off everybody. Like he is a pretty great guy, you know, like it's so surreal and hilarious.
So what's it like? You said you did some. Was it writing for mashup?
Well, it was a producer.
Right, yes. So you worked on mashup to essentially.
Right. Yeah. And I only say producer as in that's the hilarious term they give when they don't want to. It's such a like when they're just sort of like you know, like, well, can't really pay you the Writers Guild fee. You know, we can't afford to pay you all that. We're gonna take all the things you do and lump them into one vague title called producer.
But it'll look really good on a resume. So
yeah, but also, you know, like, I don't know. I mean, I think in the very beginning, I was like, oh, producer, that's pretty cool. You know, and then that, after it was done, I was like, oh, it's just like a bullshit title they give anybody that fucking, you know, they're like, that's, I think I heard there's a joke in Hollywood that's, you know, they'll give secretaries a producer title just instead of giving them a raise to like,
well, we're
just because it sounds
cooler.
Money,
but you're gonna be a producer
now. Oh, producer, so, I'll put it on my resume.
So that's something good. Congratulations, you're really doing a good job here. Just keep doing what
you're
doing.
I also love like the idea of like a resume, you know, cracks me up. Like, because people will say that, oh, that'd be good for your resume. Be good for your resume. Like, who's looking at somebody, like what was it? Someone was like, oh, I did some show, and like somebody's like Gaffigan stopped by, and they're like, oh, so now you can say you can open up for Gaffigan, put that on your resume. And it's like, who's looking at this resume?
When you go to do a show, you're like, okay, here's my resume, and they're like, okay, well, he's open for Gaffigan.
Exactly.
So that's good. He, Yeah, this looks like, let's give him, yeah, okay.
I could judge you on your act.
Is he funny? I don't know, but look at what he
did. Look at his resume.
Phenomenal. This, yeah, God, how is somebody passing? I mean, this, yeah.
He did a free show in Arkansas for 300 people. Wow, yeah. Wow, that's good for his resume.
And he's great with Excel and Word? Yeah. Hell yeah. Okay, sign that dude, for sure. Excellent.
It's so funny, man.
So what's it like compared to like writing for a show or you know, creating material for a show compared to your own stand-up? You know, is there a difficulty in writing for skits compared to...
Well, in your own stand-up act, the only person you have to convince it's funny is yourself.
Yeah.
You know, to at least try it. You know, Mashup was... I got to work with, like, so many fun, awesome, hilarious people, you know? Like, that was T.J. Miller, sort of, you know, he was the host of the show, and it was so fun to work with him writing, you know, sketches, because we have a very, I think, very absurdist sensibility that we like to write, and to have a show that's sort of like we could write like little sketches and that are sort of create, you know, just really silly and nonsensical was, you know, super awesome. We had a lot of stand-up buddies on there and improviser buddies. I mean, there's not a lot of scenarios, I think, that you can take like your stand-up friends and your improv friends and work together on the same show, you know?
Right.
You know, but there is like, you know, there's stuff that's like, and even there's, we were sort of talking before this, I just did something that we'll keep it vague, you know, but
another project.
There's a project that I just worked on where it's like, it's interesting, you know, it's a TV thing that like, you know, you write something and then, it's like I saw, you ever see the Woody Allen movie where he talks about, it's some documentary about him. I think it's like a two-parter on Netflix, originally aired on PBS maybe, but like, he just talks about like, once he's done he still uses a typewriter, you know, once he's done typing that typewriter, you know, and he finishes the screenplay, and he takes it out, he's like, this is the last moment it'll ever be what I envision it to be, you know? And at the second it's out of my hands, a lot of other people, you know?
Yeah.
And it's weird, like, pitching stuff to people that are just, you know, sometimes people are like, you know, like with Mashup, TJ was, you know, me and TJ, we did Heavyweight, was a sketch group together. We've worked together, like, in a million different ways. So we kind of know, we know each other, you know? Like, we know, like if we pretty much find... Even if we don't think it's immediately the most hilarious thing the other person pitches, we can find what's funny about it and try to build on that, you know? Right. As opposed to pitching stuff to other people that maybe you don't have the same sensibility or they aren't as open to what you have to say because they're not as comfortable around you yet or whatever. Or, and pitching something and then being just shooting something down, you know, is funny.
Yeah.
To at least consider... Right. You know, or at least give it a chance, you know, even though it doesn't have to be made. We'd be like, let's entertain this idea for a moment, because, I mean, I think this is, you know, very fun. And have people just, like, kind of shoot it down, being like, ugh, it's so frustrating, you
know? Almost like it has to fit a mold, the specific mold, because we see this thing works here, this works here, this works here, so it has to fit that.
Yeah.
There's no outside-the-box, essentially, thinking, because you have to... fit that, and if not, they just kind of shoot it down.
I mean, and as a writer, you or a quote unquote creative consultant or producer, these names they give you, you know, it's it's part of your job to realize, you know, that you are supposed to fit into some sort of mold or whatever. You know, you can't just if something. You know, on Mashup, you can't just write a sketch and be like, this, you know, I mean, same with Letterman or Conan. There's certain sketches that just wouldn't fit those programs, you know, even though they're very funny on their own. And you have to be savvy enough to know what goes where.
Right.
But, like, when you're, it is so frustrating when you're working on some of those things and, like, somebody that I worked with on Mashup at one point told me when I was pitching them something, why do you want to do this? Why do you want to make this thing this? It was weird. There was a sketch, and I was pitching pitching an extra joke to the sketch, you know?
Yeah.
Or a different way to do this other joke. And he said, why do you want to do this? And I was like, taken aback by it. And I was like, well, it'll make this sketch funnier.
Yeah.
You know? And he said, not everything has to be funny. And when you're writing a comedy show for Comedy Central and somebody tells you that, you're just like, man, we are not on the same page. Right, yeah. You know, I thought I get not everything has to be funny, I guess, but also if there's no reason not to make something funnier, you know, I mean, we're not working on Lifetime, you know, it's not like this is the part of the screenplay in the movie where we need an honest moment to happen.
Yeah.
That's set up the next comedic moment, you know. Yeah, this is a comedy sketch show where like as many jokes, could you imagine working on Simpsons and being like, you know what, guys, let's just have a little bit of Moe.
We got about 27 minutes of funny. This show's getting too funny.
It's too funny at this point. We're saturated. Yeah. Funny is spilling out
this
of
us. This is, you know, we've hit that level where now the show's not going to be that good because it's just too funny, and you know, people only like to laugh for so long,
and you're like,
and we have to give them away.
What are you talking about, man? Yeah. You know, it's like you work so hard, you dream of working on a show to make everything as funny as possible, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus Christ, could you imagine the Zucker brothers, you know, an airplane? Like, guys, we hit 400 jokes in the past 2 minutes. Yeah. That's just too many.
We have another hour we got to fill, but we got to have to keep it serious because we've met our quota.
We've met our quota, man. On, otherwise, guys, this is going to be the most historical comedy of the 80s, you know? Oh, wait. And what? Yeah. You know, and then this other project that I just worked on where you pitch something funny and they're like, that's not right for our demographic.
Yeah.
Our demographic won't like this because that's not their sense of humor. And to a point, you're just, I mean, you know, yeah, if you're pitching like, you know, I mean, it's one thing if you're pitching like a crass joke that only teenage boys like.
Right.
I can understand it, or a dirty joke, but what you think, just like, this is a pretty funny idea. I think everybody could think this idea is funny, and they're like, yeah, but our demographic has a very specific sense of humor, and we really want to cater to that. And you're like, but they might like this too. Yeah, they might, but everybody likes that. We want what just these people like.
Yeah.
We're like, oh man, all right.
It's almost micromanaging too much to be like, we need this specific little, and I mean, that's I guess their job, and that's what they get paid for to do, but it's almost like that's taking away some of the freedom. And I think that's what's hurting TV, is that they're trying to be so narrow down to this certain little group of people, that whether it's like I don't know what show. I mean, you could say like, you think Jersey Shore is like really a certain type of people, but then everybody's loved it or whatever. But there's certain shows that are to target for certain groups of people, and it's just, I mean, it's oversaturated now in TV, and I think
finally people are realizing it.
Yeah,
you know, finally people are trying to change it, and it is weird. Like sometimes you're like, sometimes you feel like you have, because they always want to make it feel like you have a shit ton of freedom, you know. And the way I don't know if this is what somebody said to me once or something that we, I don't know where this, but just the idea of like having in it feels like sometimes you have a, they go, do whatever you want to do inside this very tiny circle.
Right.
You know, like that's sort of what it feels like sometimes. You're like, just great. You can have any ideas you want. You just have to use this specific stick right here.
Right.
And use this bucket of paint, and that's all you can use. Yeah. And you can't use anything
else. Here's a 4x4 box, steel box. You can get in this. Okay, we're going to close up. Do anything you
want.
Anything
you want. Just let loose.
Just do what you want. And you're sitting here, and you can't move your arm, and you're cramped in there, and you're like, can't move. But no, you're fine. Just keep doing whatever you want to do, man.
Whatever you
want to
do.
Dude.
Oh, man. Okay. It's I don't know. I mean, yeah, that's it.
But I guess, I mean, it's also the sense of, you know, you got to pay the bills or whatever.
Yeah.
And so there's that side of it, too, that we're used. But it seems like, too, a lot of, especially comedians, are finding, you know, working in doing writing and things like that, because it just seems like there's a lot of jobs, especially in television, where you have a lot of funny guys that are, you know, behind the scenes doing a lot of the writing. Do you prefer the writing side of it compared to do stand-up? I mean, there's probably nothing better than getting a laugh live, you know, but didn't know if you just...
Yeah, paycheck's better. being able to eat that month's pretty nice.
That's always... Food's good.
You know?
Yeah. Go to
McDonald's. Here's some laughs I got last week at this bar show.
Can I get
fries with that?
Yeah.
I mean, there's different, you know, it's everything's different, you know.
Yeah.
You know, stand-up is different than improv, is different than sketch, is different than, like, TV. And I think, like, I don't know, there's something about, like stand-up is great, but there's also, like, a mashup, like, for instance, you know, coming up with, like, bits with your buddies and being like, that's hilarious, let's try to put this on TV, you know. Like, that's, there's something about collaborating with other people that are very funny that you work well with.
that's you know, it's a different satisfaction than stand-up.
Yeah.
You know, stand-up's such a lonely warrior on the road, and you can't really... To be able to share some of the, just failures and glories with other people it's fun to sit back with. You know, stand-up is so weird, because, like, the best-case scenario, it goes well, and you're just kind of by yourself going, did it.
I'm awesome.
You know? And you have nobody to really share that feeling with but yourself. It's kind of gross, you know? But, like... You know, but, like, as opposed to, like, you know, like, working with other people, you could sit back with other people, and then the crowd would be like, you know.
Yeah.
To be like, it's nice to have other people to share
nice positive reinforcement sometimes.
Say, yeah.
We kicked ass tonight.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And I think, too, there's got to be with, like, writing, you know, you actually have a little more ability to fulfill some of your ideas, you know, because when you're doing a stand-up by yourself, you know, you may have ideas for different characters that, you know, either maybe one you can't pull off on your own, or... For it to work, you need more than two or three people on stage to do it, and it's, you know, to fill out a skit. There's just something probably gratifying about that, you know?
It's great, you know, like, working in I saw this thing, kind of, based, I saw this Salvador Dali exhibit when I was working on Second City in a cruise ship. We went to, where were we, Istanbul, and there was a Salvador Dali exhibit. and I was like, and I heard about him, I didn't know much about him, but I went and checked it out, and it was like... It was so awesome. But one of the biggest things I, like, sort of took from that is that, you know, this is a guy who, like, I was like the melted clock guy, you know? But he, like, you know, he did paintings, but he did sculptures, but he did poetry, but he did, you know, animation, you know, he worked on a Disney film. He did, like, all these, you know, different things. And there was something over there that I read that he basically said that when he had an idea... You know, he looked at the idea and he figured out, like, what was the best way to communicate that idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like he was sitting there like, all right, I feel like doing a metal sculpture today. What shall it be?
Yeah.
He had the idea first, and then he was like, what's the best way to express this idea? Oh, actually, a metal sculpture might be the best way, or an animation might be, or this might just be like a poem. You know, and the idea of, like, in comedy, coming up, and like what you're just saying, like, sometimes having that idea. They're like, oh, this is a very funny idea, but I don't know if it would be best communicated in my stand-up. It might best to have, like you just said, a couple buddies and help you out. This might make a better sketch than a stand-up idea. Or it might be, you know, like in Chicago, it was, I felt so fortunate to work with T.J. Miller and Mark Roderman and Brady Novak in Heavyweight.
Mm-hmm.
Ken Barnard, Michael Sherman were on early on. And those guys, like, it was very fun to work with those dudes and take, like, ideas that were like, this isn't the best, you know, to be like, hey, guys, I want to try this idea with you guys, you know? And we were all stand-ups also, and we were all improvisers. And we had a saying where we go, does this improv make my stand-up look sketch? Because we would be like, sometimes we would try something that we would try it as a stand-up bit.
Yeah.
And it just didn't really work. And so we would try it as a sketch, and it would be so much better. Conversely, there was stuff that we pitched in the sketch group that didn't really fly, and it was better just communicating. Then there's sometimes those ideas that, like, and then you improvise inside of the idea, you know, which is great. But yeah, I mean, it is nice to have somebody, like, be, you know, because you can do act outs yourself and play all the characters, but sometimes to have just other people kind of, that's what, I mean, so many people are shooting so much videos now. It's so crazy how, like, I feel like 10 years ago or 12 years ago when I just started or whatever, you know, no, I don't even think YouTube was, when's YouTube? 2000?
It was probably 2004.
Five or something like that.
Because it was in college is when Facebook and MySpace started to really kind of strike off, and YouTube with it too.
And like before that, no one was making videos,
right?
Because and when you did, you had to, like, rent out a theater and show your video, and, like, that was the only way you could really communicate it to people.
It was E-bombs world, I think, is what
right. First, that was first, it.
Like, viral that was video it. Thing, and then it.
YouTube's I remember like, people telling me, like, E-bombs world, like, watch this monkey smell its finger, it falls off the tree. I think E-bombs world was just that video for a while.
Just that video, and then the history of dance or something.
Right.
Maybe that was YouTube. I don't even remember, but yeah, it was.
And but now 55. It's like, you now that you have this, like, other medium, like, people are just cranking out the videos now.
Yeah.
It's actually great that you have, there is a platform that you can
like, and you can make money too. I mean, I was looking at some of the top people making, like, there's guys that make like $6 million.
Right.
I mean, that has to be your job, and you have to have, you know, it's not just putting a video on how to you know, carve an apple or cut an apple.
Although some of those people seem to be killing it, though, you know?
If you just, there's a video on there of like how to turn on a light, and it's a guy just like, okay, and then you flip the light up, and it's just like, it's my son watches videos on YouTube. It's just like counting Skittles, and it's got like 6 million views. I'm like,
Why
can't I do that? I need that to happen.
Is that a real thing?
Seriously.
Is it for kids, or is it like...
Yeah, a lot of times, yeah, it's just like kids. Like, a guy will be like, okay, here's your Skittles, and separate them by colors. And I guess it's like, it's kids. I mean, it's just a dude and his son, and he's counting Skittles, and he's like, these are purple, and these are red. And it's like an Indian guy, I think. He's like, well,
so funny.
And my son will just watch it, and I'm looking, I'm like, this has got like... millions and millions of views, and
that's actually not a bad idea. We should throw together like a...
I'm just saying, we need to start like a kids production thing. It doesn't have to be crazy, but it's something that kids are going to come off, and if they recognize numbers and colors were gold,
that'd be awesome. We get a dumb suit, have a sing-songy voice.
That's honestly, that's what my 90% of the stuff my son watches is like, just these kids things. And seriously, some have like 60 million views, and I just can't imagine what kind of bank those guys are like.
Right, it's got to be decent. And so you ever see like a video where it's just like you turn on, and it's just like the guy, like the volume's wrong.
Yeah,
it's like, ah, this is how you make a ham sandwich. Yeah. You know, all I like to do is cut the crust off, and it's like it's he's doing it on his webcam, yeah. And it's like his face is not in it half the time.
Right.
And it's got like 300 views. Like, what was the goal here, man? Yeah. Like, what? It's so... I love the ambition, because it is. It's so weird that like anybody can be,
can do it.
Anybody can be. Truly, anybody could be. I guess, maybe for lack of a better word, famous at any given moment. If they just... that's your like
niche,
gateway.
You can do anything
into it.
Like, and watching, my son will watch elevators. Just people going on and just checking out elevators, and people are excited about like, look at the numbers, and I'm just like, and he's like, I want to watch the elevators. I'm like, okay.
Oh my god.
And that, and the chocolate eggs. There's chocolate eggs, and people just sit there, and they have all these eggs, and they have like Dora and like characters on them. They just open them up, and there's toys inside, and they show them the toys. They move it on the next
and
egg.
That's the whole video.
That's the whole video. It's like 30 minutes long, and there's like 7 million views. I'm like, this is what I'm doing wrong with my life.
Yeah, meanwhile, you're like, you know, you're cranking out a podcast every week, you know, you're putting your writing scripts and filming and like shelling out your own money to film a video, and it gets like 300 views, and you're like, fuck, you need to be cracking eggs open.
Seriously.
That's where the money is.
So that's what my new venture. So if you guys can find... and these eggs you have to buy from, like, Europe, because they're not allowed in America because they're candy inside of eggs or something like that. And so my wife's like,
there
you
was
gotta
an
import
incident.
These, and you got a kid. They'll get caught in customs, and you can get fined, like, thousands of dollars if you try and bring them in from Europe. I'm like, yeah, this is... I need to do this.
I want to buy a cat and just fucking... just put the camera in the cat room and throw weird... just a bunch of just... hilarious incidents waiting to happen around the cat and film it and just wait for it to do something adorable, post it online and make that fucking sweet cat video money.
Put a glass of water just anywhere and you know that cat will go knock it off.
It's gonna spill it. Oh, there goes the... wait, like a bucket, a precarious bucket of ping pong balls.
Yeah, right.
Just waiting to fall over on the ground or bouncy balls.
It makes me think of like an American Pie when they're like watching him about to like have sex with a girl, you know, on the webcam, and everybody's gathered around like all these different places and they're like, oh yeah. I just feel like people would be doing that watching a cat like waiting for that.
It reminds me of Brian Regan, the bit when he's talking about the guy editing the fishing show, the fishing the fishing tapes.
Yeah,
like, you know, for all those fishing shows on ESPN and stuff like that. There's like, but there's like, there's an editor on that, and he's like, I want to... he's like, imagine that guy being the editor. Like, he said, just a stick and like,
it's
know,
so
stuff.
Funny.
But yeah,
Brian Regan's
the best. Too. Yeah, he's my fave.
So what was it like, just because you've been on a couple on what, Conan and
Fallon?
Yeah. What was that experience like? Like, how is that process? I mean, how does it, when they bring you in, is it just like, okay, here's the time you got and you know, whatever, or is it...
it's well, let's see, like the Fallon thing, you know, let's see, you go down to like 30 Rock, they send a car to pick you up from Brooklyn. So fancy, and then which sucks if you don't live in Brooklyn.
So we got a car for you. Where are you from?
I'm in Connecticut. Yeah, well, you're gonna have to go down to Brooklyn.
If you can go to Brooklyn, we'll get that car to you.
I passed 30 Rock on the way. Yeah, you still gotta go to Brooklyn,
that's
buddy.
Just the rules, man. Sorry.
You know, like, let's see. You go in a green room and you kind of just like nervously sit back there. You can bring a couple buddies in,
and then you peek outside and you watch the roots walk by and you look at some roots and then you're like, is that Bobby Brown? Like, it is Bobby Brown. Yeah. And you go back in. And then, like, I did the giant set list bit on Fallon, and then, like, it was funny. I had, like, an idea, like, or something happened where I wanted to change the set list.
I was going to wonder if, like, you got, like, right up to it, and you're like, yeah, 2 seconds before going on, like, maybe I should do this one instead.
Yeah, there was something that made, there was something I wanted to change on it, and so I decided to rewrite it real quick. So I rewrote the whole giant set list, while I'm in the green room, before this other sheet of paper that I had, that I brought in case something happened to the first one, just like a backup, and then I rewrote the whole thing. And then I still, like, there is a couple letters that I kind of squeezed in there because I didn't space it out right.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck. And I was like, whatever. It's fine. And then, like this is kind of funny. I was outside in the hallway, and Jimmy Fallon, like, walks by, and I see him make eye contact, and I kind of gave him the head nod and the smile, and then he gives me the head nod and the smile. And then he walks right past me and then knocks on my dressing room door. and then I was like, it says Nick Vatterott on everything. I was like, hey, I go, I'm that guy. He goes, oh, okay. You know, I was like, I mean, he was very nice. He was a super nice guy. And then, let's see, then, you know, you kind of sit back there, and then they, like, you go to makeup and all that stuff. They put a shit ton of makeup on the top of my head, which was very funny. Like, they were, like, really just, you got a lot of glare coming out of your bald head. There's a lot of shine
going on. We can't be doing that. It's going to throw the cameras off.
Yeah,
a little white balance and stuff.
You'll ruin little blind people and stuff. Then, let's see, you know, and so then you go out, and then they're like, okay, well, this bit's up right now, and you're next, and you go backstage. And then, like, he sits there, and you're, like, behind the curtain, and there's this, like, guy, and he's on the headset, and he's got his hand out, like, kind of, like when your mom braces, she hits the brakes in the car, and kind of holds you.
Making sure you don't just run out there before you're not supposed to, like, that guy's.
Yeah, just, like, don't run, he's still talking. and so you're sitting there, like, and part of you, like, doesn't believe that it's about to happen. Part of you thought there'd be, like, a million more things.
Yeah.
Part of you thinks it would never get to the point where you actually have to walk out there.
Right.
Like, you know it's going to happen eventually, but you just feel like it's... Then all of a sudden, like, it's like, well, you go out now. Wait, now?
Yeah.
Isn't there, like, another commercial break? Isn't there another thing he has to do? Isn't there, like, no, you're about to go out now? Like, oh, shit, okay. And then, so, Jimmy Fallon, he did this thing where he goes, all right, ladies and gentlemen, your next comedian is making his debut on television. Give it up for Nick Vatterott. And then the crowd starts going, and then the guy lets me go, and I start walking out. And then all of a sudden, before I get to the curtain part where you walk through, Fallon goes, wait, you know what? Stop. Can we stop? And then the rodeo comes over. And he's like, he comes come back here. I was like, ugh. You know, like,
right,
this false start. Like, ugh. Like, on the one side, you're like, relieved that you didn't have to get another second to compose yourself. But on the other side, you're like, fuck, I kind of just wanted to go out there.
It's a whole other second of freaking out.
You're like, oh, fuck. Like, what just happened? And then he goes, Fallon did this thing where he walks out from behind the desk. He walks up to the audience. He goes, hey, guys, this next I want you guys to do a huge – you guys have been so awesome all night. This would mean the world to me if you could do this for me. This next comedian, it's his very first time being on TV. And if you could just be like – it would mean the world to me if you guys just were like the most awesome audience for this guy and just went crazy and just like supported him and just – you know, gave him your all. It would mean, can you guys do that for me? Yeah. So he sort of like started and then re-energized him. And like, that was just super cool that he did that.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, you know, I don't know if he does that for everybody. I don't know if, you know, maybe he knew the bit and was kind of wanted to protect the bit as much as possible, you know, but it was super cool that he did that. And I went out there and then that audience was just like, the most supportive audience, you know.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, so then it's done, and then there's this weird moment where, so it's you know, they told you, they go, so when it's done, you know, like it's gonna be the episode. They'll do a quick commercial break. Jimmy will make sort of a game time decision if he's gonna ask you to. He'll do a goodbye, and he does the goodbye either from the desk or from the stage, or you know where and he's like in. He'll make that decision after you go during the commercial break. And I was like, okay. So he comes over, he says, you know, thanks and all that, and, you know, and then we go to commercial break, and he's like, okay, you know what, let's do the goodbye from over on the stage. Mm-hmm. So Bam Margiano
Margera.
Yeah, from the Jackass. Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And then fucking and Ed Norton were the guests, right?
Yeah.
So they walk over there. Like, I'm a huge Ed Norton fan. I've loved him in everything.
Yeah.
Even just saw Birdman the other day. He's amazing in it. But he... He pulled the biggest dick move in the fucking goodbyes. He go, so the, he's like, all right, you know, so Fallon goes like, thank you very much, you know, whatever. Carson Daly's up next or whatever it was, you know, thank you, good night. So I'm sitting next to, you know, Ed Norton, and they did this, like, sleeveless T-shirt sketch, and it was very funny. And I said to Ed, I was like, I go, hey, man, I go, which, by the way, you know how you were talking before about the obligatory good job after a show, and when you don't get it, it feels weird.
Yeah,
you know, I got that from Ed Norton. You know, I like was like, hey man, I go, you were really, you know, I go, hey, he didn't say good job or anything to me, you know, which is fine. It's still, again, like I said, it's weird when it's not there. Even lie to me, just, I just did my first TV thing. Just bullshit me. I don't care. Yeah. You know, I'm fucking, this was weird. It's odd. You
just
know?
Being polite to say, hey,
yeah, good whatever. Job, man. Even, yeah. But you know what? Okay. He doesn't do that. Doesn't think to do it. That's fine. I don't care. You know, what annoyed me though, was that, I go, so I said, hey man, your sleeveless t-shirt sketch was like super funny. And he sort of looked at me and gave me like a, I don't know, this is not going to convey over the podcast, but kind of like a, you know, like a weird, you know, like a dismissive smirk, you know, and then turned, did a 180, put his back to me and talked to Bam on like national television, right? And so like, and I'm just sitting there like Ashley Simpson when the fucking mic comes out on SNL, just kind of like, dude, like just sitting there like,
doing a little,
hoedown dance, you know, I'm just sitting there just like leaning, like back and forth, leaning, just like, and I was like, this, I got nobody to talk, the guy just fucking dissed me on like, my hero just disses me on fucking national television. So it's funny, like afterwards I was like, the set was fun. I feel good about it. That weird thing at the end, though, is kind of a little lame. You know, I was like, probably nobody will notice it, or you know, whatever. And it's so funny. So many people afterwards, like, dude, yeah, man, I love your set. It was really great. Hey, did Edward Norton totally fucking diss you? I was like, you saw that? It's like, yeah, man, it was hilarious. Yeah. You go to talk to him, and he turns his back to you, and then you're just sitting there by yourself while he blew you off, and the credits are going up, and you're like, just you don't know what to do with yourself because like you're just sitting there like a dumbass. It was so funny, you know. What a dick. And then I don't know. So then like then afterwards with him in the back after the show, Jimmy Fallon comes by and whenever I'd watched late night talk shows my entire life, there was always that part where the talk show goes, "Hey, come back anytime." And I'd never seen it. And I watched a shit ton. I watched Johnny Carson like every night, you know. Yeah. I never saw anybody do the joke of, "Oh, can I come back tomorrow?"
Yeah.
Right? I'm sure it's been done a million times. I just had never seen it. I'd never seen anybody do it.
Yeah.
So, and I didn't even do it on TV. I just did it
just
in the conversation with them.
Yeah.
And he goes, "Hey man, you're really great. Thank you so much." You know, he's like, "We'd love to have you come back anytime." And I go, "How about tomorrow?" And then he did this thing where when I waited tables for like 10 years and like the one joke I got more than anybody, anything else is when I would say, "Can I get you guys anything else?" And the guy would go, "Yeah, $1 million." Customers would say that once a week to me and I couldn't even fake laugh at it after a while because I'd heard it so often. $1 million, you know? Yeah. And I felt like I had done the equivalent of, like,
a million dollars. It's funny when I say no, but without being like, fuck no. Like, just being like, "Oh, that's funny."
I don't know. Or, I don't know, but it's, the second I said it, I realized that he got that all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he goes, actually, we're not filming tomorrow. We're gonna do a gig. We're actually in Kentucky doing like a tour thing. I was like, "Cool, I'll meet you there." And he goes, "Yeah, we kind of it's already kind of booked or he couldn't." I felt like I had just disappointed him so much in doing that bit, you know? Yeah. Like, but whatever. So that
he
was.
He sincerely thought you were like trying to get all like, "Okay, I'll be
there." Yeah. I don't know if he was just like, he just didn't feel like playing along or like was just,
you know, or maybe he was doing a bit and I didn't get it or what, but it was like, but he was, you know, he was the nicest guy and he came by and said hi beforehand and said, thank you. And I felt, I was like, oh, I want to do this bit. And then it just totally bombed.
Just
you
one
know?
Of those things like, I'm going to do it. And then you're like, oh,
yeah, man. Oh, well. And, but it was funny though. I ran into, Bobby Brown came up to me after the show. That's pretty surreal.
Right.
Because he was like, oh, man, you're crazy, man. You're hilarious. And I was like, Bobby Brown, you know? I almost worked Bobby Brown into the bit.
Oh, wow.
Because, the bit is like all these things happen. You don't know why they happen. At the end of the set, you go back and see what happened.
Right.
And I wanted to do this thing where I just start... I can't remember what it was, but I start pointing over for pointing to somebody for no reason.
Yeah.
And then you come back and go, now look over and do finger guns to Bobby Brown, you know. And I mean, how great is you get to bring Bobby Brown into your set, you know?
If you have the opportunity, why not? Yeah.
So that was like the Fallon thing. And then, I don't know. And then the Conan thing Conan I've watched ever since. I mean, college, that's what we just watched. We watched it every night. I mean, the best 5 minutes of television, I think, are like the 5 minutes after his monologue and before the first guest. Like, mm-hmm. those sketches and those bits that he would do, I thought it was funnier than anything else on TV. Yeah. And
Walker Texas Ranger clip.
Oh, yeah! You know, when he pulls the lever. Yeah. And, we would rush home from the bars or wait to leave to go to the bars, depending on where we were. Just to watch those 5 minutes, you know? Or we would stop parties just to watch the five... We would go, the 5 minutes are on! And we'd stop the party, watch the best 5 minutes of television, and then go back to the party, you know? Like, he was such a hero of mine. And so, like, to get to do that show was, like, you know, that was so fucking awesome, you know? Like, and that was, like... I had a fucking ton... When we went to L.A., I had a ton of buddies come out to that show. Because I had, like, probably about... I don't know, it must have been, like... Oh, 10 or so like Chicago comics that we all started together in Chicago.
Yeah.
And just they all like we all came out to the green room and we just like hung out in the green room for a little bit and then they were in the audience so you could hear them all laugh at the audience and stuff.
Yeah.
And we just had a real good time with it, you know? And hearing Conan, first time I met, you know, Conan is so, you know, I think he's a different animal than Fallon. I think he's working on the show up until
the moment
it goes on, and I think he starts working on the next show the second the show's over, you know?
Yeah.
And my only real interaction with Conan was coming out, you know, seeing him coming over and chatting real quick. Did the guitar thing on that one, and then like hearing that Conan laugh, like, in the very beginning is, like, I was, like, I'm done. I'm, like, this could be all that happens. And like, hearing Conan laugh at something you do is pretty fucking cool, you know? And it also made the set, you know, like, I felt so much, I felt at ease in the set after that happened. And that was pretty fun. And then he comes over afterwards. I swear, maybe I beat myself up too much about it, but I swear I have like the most, I never have like a solid interaction with any like sort of like celebrity type person. I always feel like I do something weird or I misfire on some fucking caliber or whatever. Because Conan comes over and the guitar that I used on it. So my roommate Jesse Pop, who's a comic, hilarious comedian. He got hired like 6 months before that to write on Conan.
Mm-hmm.
So 6 months before I'm on Conan, Jesse moves out of my apartment in Brooklyn to LA to work on the Conan show, right? So between that time, I started doing this, you know, this bit, and Jesse had left his guitar at the apartment. And I wanted to do this bit where, you know, this guitar just completely... I needed to saw a guitar in half. I needed to take a guitar and saw it into three different... I was going to buy one online, but then Jesse... I saw Jesse, or I talked to him. I was like, hey, what are you doing with this guitar here? You want me to send it to you? He's like, you know what? It's going to cost more to send it than the guitar's worth. You can just keep it.
Yeah.
I go, would you care if I sawed it into three different pieces? He's like, what? And I go, I want to do it for this bit. And he's like, yeah, I don't care. So, you know, I did it. And then So Conan comes out, and the guitar is in pieces on the ground, and you know, and he's like, he makes some juggles like boy, they don't make guitars like they used to, or something like that. I think I have a fun, I have a fun story.
Yeah.
Hey, Conan, that guitar is your writer's guitar because he used to be my roommate. You know, kind of like, hey, I know Jesse Pott. We know, you know,
right?
Yeah, like, hey, you know Dan. You know, we all know Dan. Yeah. You know, like that connection you have. And then, like, instead of, I don't know, I thought that was, like, a common ground that we could kind of talk about. And then Conan just kind of goes, Jesse Pop is the most, he said something like, he's one of the most, he's such a quiet person, you know?
Yeah.
And it was sort of a weird response. You know, or something like that. Which, and I would talk to Jesse Pop about it, and he was like, yeah, he's like, Conan busts my balls all the time about how I'm kind of, I look like Lee Harvey Oswald. And like, he's like, and he's like, and, you know, Jesse's like, Conan's like the funniest person I've ever been in the room with. You know, he's like, he's so funny. And like, yeah, he busts my balls about being quiet all the time, you know, and it was just sort of a weird thing. It's like, hey, the guitar fell. Yeah, guess who's it is? It's your writers. It was Jesse Pop, my roommate, 6 months ago. He's like, the quietest person. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba-ba. All right, guys, that was our whole interaction. And then, it's the whole thing. We're on the stage again. Where Conan's like, guys, thanks so much for watching. Blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
And so everyone comes over. The guests on that show were Nick Frost. Shaun of the Dead,
yeah.
Hot Fuzz, and Bob Costas. Okay,
oh.
So I've always wanted to. So Nick Frost, it's fine. He's a funny guy. Andy's the guy I want to meet.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. And I've been such a huge Andy Richter fan my entire life. I can't wait to meet Andy. You know, so I just want to talk to Andy, right?
Yeah.
But it's weird because like everyone's just saying hi. There's none of this like it wasn't like the thing where Norton blows me. You know, it's like this for blows me.
I was
cut off weird there. Yeah. Nick always finishes your sentences.
That experience took a totally different turn.
He got me off. I forgot. But so everyone's like kind of shaking hands and saying hi and everything. And I saw Bob Costas and instantly my dad was like, Nick, if you ever meet, this is like 5 years ago, or I think my dad said this to me like a dozen times in my life. Nick, if you ever meet Bob Costas, tell him you're from St. Louis, because he's from St. Louis.
Yeah,
and I was like, whatever. So then you're in that moment where you're actually meeting Bob Costas, and you go, "Hey, I'm from St. Louis," and he goes, "Oh, you know," he goes, and then he immediately went into Cardinals baseball, and now me and Bob are kind of talking Cardinals baseball, right?
Yeah.
But what's funny, though, is, like, then Andy Richter comes over, and he says hi, and I'm trying to say hi to Richter, but I'm kind of caught in a conversation with Bob Costas. And then I could see Andy kind of being, like
a jerk.
He was just, and then I was, like, trying to say hi to Andy, but not be rude to Bob, and then, like, I think Andy was kind of like, okay, and then he kind of, like, walked away, and I wanted to like talk to Andy, and I feel like Andy. I don't know. I almost felt like Andy felt a little like I blew him.
He walked off. This is his thought. Yeah. He's like, that dude Nick Vadar is a dick, and people from St. Louis are dicks. you totally screwed not only yourself but the entire St. Louis people
from Andy Richter ever coming in entertaining us.
Because like, no, those St. Louis people just blow me off.
That's so funny.
Just trying to talk to him, dude. Jeez.
I feel like with Conan, like every time he has a comedian, he always comes over. And, you know, it seems very nice, but he always says, oh, that was hilarious. But it's like, when he says it, like, to everyone,
every single time,
it just starts becoming
so like musicians, like, oh, that was great, man. That was great. Thanks a lot.
Right. Okay. I wonder if he realizes he does that.
Yeah. Or,
but also, if it comes from a genuine place, can you really rag on him for it?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like he appreciates it all, being a comedian himself and everything, and he knows what was going on there.
Yeah.
And, like... And sure, it was a great act, but like the way he says it, the same way every time.
Right. That was great.
Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I did think it because I've noticed that, and I was thinking of like when he comes over, be like, "Was it great?"
You
know,
yeah. Like to set him up for it. What did you like the best?
It's real funny. I just did I just did that show, Comics Unleashed, mm-hmm. with Byron Allen.
Oh yeah.
And. So Mark Norman did the show. too. Mm-hmm. And Mark was telling me that he kind of like we were talking about, you know, like, or, you know, kind of like make, you know, set, making, setting something up based on something he says all the time.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, so Byron Allen does these things that he says all the time that Mark Norman wanted to like sort of like, I think Mark's joke was, you know, Byron Allen, they would come on and they would say, you know the premise of the show. They yeah. like softball lob these.
Just set them up like this is.
Yeah.
Here you go.
You know, it'd be like if Gaffigan was on, I'd be like, so do you have 10 minutes on Hot Pockets?
Yeah.
You know, and then he goes into the bit. So Mark apparently, every time they would say something like, so you don't like catcalling, right? Or so you grew up in, you know, like yeah. you hate pizza or whatever his thing was,
yeah.
Mark would go, yeah, how'd you know that? And he kept like, every time he'd say something, he would just like sort of like tease the, you know, like the, and they got, yeah. apparently they got super mad at him for doing it. And they made him stop and start over and
wow.
all that stuff. And it's so funny because like, I feel like Mark's just trying to have fun with the whole
right.
premise.
Yeah.
I mean, they were all super nice over there and it was actually a lot of fun
yeah.
to do. But I thought it was too bad that they didn't let,
yeah,
you know, maybe they thought he was being mean spirited and
yeah.
I wasn't there. I didn't see it, but I thought it was funny.
Right.
I thought it was like super funny
yeah.
to do that, you know?
Well, only his friends could joke like that, man. Don't go, you don't know him, man. You
right. Right.
Things. Yeah.
It's so funny. They got the aquarium there still. That show's been on forever. I'm like, yeah. those are the same. How many fish have they gone through in an
right,
aquarium
yeah.
back there?
You just see
it's
like
been on for years.
Floating in the back.
Yeah.
Like,
we should clean that
you
out.
Should
you know?
Take care of that. It's horrible. Get a note
so
from Peter here soon. Jeez. Well, we're just about here out of time, but I want to talk real quick about your podcast because you have
the Nick Vatterott show.
Yeah, because we were talking before we started the last episode, which was I think on Halloween, and is it you who's talking on it? Because it sounds like it's I can't tell if there's one person doing two parts. It's the characters. Is it Marcus?
I think my whole podcast might be the most confusing.
I couldn't tell if it's
time.
You doing both characters or if it's you and then somebody else and you're like.
So the whole premise of the show is it's the Nick Vatterott show, and
yeah.
each week Nick Vatterott cannot make it,
right.
and I play a character taking over the show, which I don't think most people who like listen to like an episode get. You
yeah.
know, they think either I really genuinely wasn't there, so what's and then they're like,
why is this guy doing a
idiot?
Podcast? He's
yeah.
not even making it. I mean,
yeah,
he's got to make
he's
a
never
priority
made it
here.
Once. They don't get that I'm doing the character. They don't get or whatever, you know, or the you know, I don't know.
We should have done this podcast and said you couldn't make it on the podcast.
Oh, that'd be hilarious. That'd be super
next
funny.
Time, next time we'll do it. Yeah.
But that you know that one was but and also I think I do sort of like very confusing things. Because, like, in my mind, I'm like, oh, people will listen every week, and after a while, they'll understand. After
yeah.
around week 5 or 6, they'll get that I'm never there.
Right, yeah.
Because I don't open up the show being, hey, this is a Nick Vatterott show, the show where Nick Vatterott's never there, and I can never, you know.
Yeah,
I just
right.
sort of just, it's like,
well,
hey, hello, it's Larry, blah, blah, Nick Vatterott show, Nick Vatterott cannot make it this week. He's out there applying for skydiving position. So,
yeah.
you know, here I am, you know, and whatever. And so, and there's like a, so I don't, I, in my mind, that's, a, but really what it is, if people listen, they start with episode 8.
Yeah, right.
Because that's the week they just come across it. And then they're like, what the fuck is this? And also, like, so many episodes are completely, like, not like other episodes. You know,
yeah.
like, TJ Miller came on and did an episode that I think was unique to any of the other ones because we just sort of, like, wasn't really an interview at all. We just sort of like riffed different like
yeah.
scenes and sketches over like a course of an hour.
Yeah.
And then I put in all these weird sound effects and stuff. And like, if you were to listen to that episode, you would have no sense of what any of the other episodes are like.
Yeah.
That being said, if you heard another episode, you wouldn't know that that was an episode that could have possibly happened.
Yeah.
You know, there has been, so like the Marcus Monroe one is who's
yeah.
the bit on that one. Cause after a while, after you do it every week for like 30 weeks, you start to run out of like characters.
I was saying, yeah, I think it starts to like get tough to try and create a new persona or something.
There's only like 9 voices I can do, you know, like so it's like, you
yeah.
know, it's just a variation of voices and just calling them a different. Some
yeah.
some weeks it's just me talking, I just call myself a different name
because
that's just easier.
Yeah,
you
not
know?
Everybody has to have a weird unique voice.
Yeah,
right?
it's like
a normal guy.
I'm Bob this week.
Yeah.
And it's just obviously, I think that there was one where I had CJ Sullivan and Sean Flannery who do Visitor's Locker Room and we had the sports episode. And I just kind of wanted to talk to them about sports.
Yeah.
And I was like, then halfway through it, like, CJ was like, Nick, I mean, Bob, wait, what's your name this week? I was like, dude, the carriage is very thin this week. It's very, it's a thin shell of any excuse to be talking.
Yeah.
But the Marcus Monroe one, I thought it'd be funny if I bring on Marcus Monroe and my character is I'm Marcus Monroe.
Yeah.
And so my character was a guy who's trying to pretend that Marcus Monroe is pretending to be Marcus Monroe when he's the real Marcus Monroe. As if, it's confusing on an already very confusing premise. So I totally understand why.
Yeah.
Then there's other ones where I did sort of do all the characters.
Yeah.
I can't remember which one it was. I think there was something where I was fucking pretty pissed about, like, just this overall just paying people in exposure mentality that's happening in dozens of different facets of comedy, whether it's, you know, granted, it's my understanding that TV show is now compensating comics, but in the beginning, you know, was it Laughs or whatever, was not paying comics, and I know people that they were getting emails going, we want you to fly yourself out there on your own dime, not get paid, fly yourself back, and you're like, dude... Your comedy club is getting exposure.
Right.
You know, like, I mean, you should not be collecting a penny then, because that the money you're making from the exposure of your comedy club itself and every week, you know.
Yeah.
Granted, so, but if they're being compensated now, then it's, that I feel like that justice is finally presented itself. But also, it's like UCB, you know, where they don't pay Upright Citizens Brigade, like, they don't pay stand-ups, even though it's weird when you charge money to see a comic and the comic doesn't see any of that money.
Right.
It's just a weird situation.
Yeah.
And, you know, UCB does this thing where they're like, we don't pay the improvisers either. And it's like, well, maybe pay your improvisers. Or, at the very least, don't make your improvisers pay 10, 20 bucks a week to rent a space, mandatory director's fee, mandatory coach's fee, mandatory, you know, rehearsal space fee. They're paying to perform on that stage. It's like, at the very least, take some of the money that you're making enough to, they just opened a fourth theater in West, like UCB Santa Monica or whatever it is. Like, if they're really hurting on money, I don't understand how they're able to open four different theaters.
Right,
you know, so it's, they're making all this money out of, you know, like the classes are just, they're just making so much money out of the classes. It's like, take some of that money and at least don't make the performers pay to perform.
Yeah.
You know, the theater is separate from the classrooms.
Yeah.
Dude, the theater is a giant ad for the class. You don't have the theater, you don't have the class.
It's like college football.
Yeah.
It's the whole same thing. It's like these guys are, they're making tons of money, and the
it's a weird thing. Yeah. And they're just like, it's so disappointing. But I did some episode that was sort of like talking about all these, and there's a bunch of other, you know, I interviewed, and I played the person that I was interviewing and all these people. So I played, you know, like, to sort of like just really kind of rant about all that stuff. And that was a super fun episode to sort of like kind of like interview all these people and play the people that I want to make fun of for, you know, like, you know.
Yeah.
Screwing comedians out of money and shit like that.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, the podcast is fun to do. And there's, I think, you know, there's so many different things you can do with podcasts. So
right.
I think that Serial that just came out, I feel like,
yeah,
is a great example of how you can do something. That's what she did with it, and how wildly popular that was.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it's a new, I mean, it's just a new basic form of entertainment that anybody can do, and it's great just for, even if it's just a creative outlet, you know, for us, that's what it is.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just, but it's great too that you have basically free rights to do whatever you want within, I mean,
whatever,
as long
you
as you're not playing Van Halen songs constantly, you know, that's your
Panama!
Podcast.
Panama!
Yeah.
You haven't heard episode 14.
Yeah, well, apparently Nick Vanderhart was sued after this episode by Van Halen.
That's what is going to get weird, though, I think. Like, you know, using this whole, like, net neutrality thing, like, I think it's going to get weird where, like, when can you use other people's music in your own thing, and when can't you? Like, I sort of I just did this video that was man takes a picture every day for a year with the lens cap on. And I wanted to do it like those mushy, you know, videos that people do, you know, like the first year of my son. And it's always like some folk singing. Yeah. So I took like some song from the Broadway musical once for all you Broadway fans out there. It's a very like Irish folksy song and it's perfect, but like, I don't know. Yeah, is it, even though I'm not like making ad revenue off that video, right. Like, is it right for me to just take somebody else's right. creation and not compensate that, you know, yeah. How do I rail on these other, how can I have this like rail on UCB and everyone who won't pay comedians and then I take somebody else's creation and apply it to my thing? Like,
the whole copyright thing is just, it's really gray.
It is a little bit gray.
It's hard to figure out what you can do and what you can't do legally. I'm sure they won't let you do
also
anything,
like ethically and morally too. Right. Like I start, you know, you justify it because you're like, well, these guys are doing pretty okay with
pretty
money,
fine,
you
right.
know, like
yeah,
they've won Tonys. They're doing. I don't think Pearl Jam's like going, hey, what is this? Hey, Nick Banner, I just used an album. Oh no, I gotta go and take him and get our 10 cents. Yeah. That is how.
That's. I think that's. Yeah, I heard
Eddie Vedder the horse.
I think that's a little. You can find him on a farm somewhere near you.
I'm resting my head on a big old pile of hay.
I think you got a cover band started here, man. You're set, dude.
Eddie Vedder the horse.
If he
sues us. You can't do that.
If stand up doesn't work out, then you got a hit artist career going there musically. Oh man,
that sounds fun.
There you go. Well, good deal.
I was gonna plug too. We got a show Saturday night, December 27th at Shameless Grounds.
Shameless Grounds. Now, I have not been there. I'm excited to go to a brand venue I've never...
Yeah. Although you said, I will not be there, but...
I will not be there, but hey, let me know how disappointed they are.
Yeah,
they paid money for
them.
That's
pretty good. Yeah.
Or happy they were that they didn't show up. Maybe that's what it is.
Show's 8 p.m., $5, and also featuring Joe Murray, Stryker Spurlock, Justin Luke, and Jeremy Helwig, some of our local guys, so...
Yeah, I love those guys are so funny, man. I love like, you know, like doing this with you guys, and like every time I feel like I come to St. Louis, there's more and more comedy happening in the area, you know. And I love it.
Yeah, there's a lot of people hustling trying to build the scene, and there's a, you know, we're trying to do our part. We've had a lot of the guys on, local guys, trying to give them a chance to spotlight and talk about what they're doing, and we had like Kelsey McClure with Comedy in the Lou, and she's doing
she's great for promoting. Yeah. You know, she's been just really getting the word out there about things, comedy things in St. Louis, and it's so awesome. And it's you know, I got like my group of friends that I grew up here because I was here up until born here, raised here, and then I think in high school I went to Mizzou, and then I've been back and forth, you know, ever since. But you know, I got buddies that, you know, like I would tell them about what's going on in Chicago. Like, what are you doing in Chicago? Or they come and visit me in Chicago and they see the whole scene up there, you know, like 10 years ago or whatever.
Yeah.
And you know, they're like, oh, cool. I wish this was in St. Louis, you know? Yeah. And I feel like it's now more and more of what's going on in St. Louis is mirroring what, you know, what's been going on in a lot of other cities for a while. And it's St. Louis is so... It's such a great place for it, you know? Like, it's fun going to all these, like, going down to the Central West End and, like, Brennan's down there.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, Firebird is, like, awesome.
Yeah.
And Foam is a cool place. Yeah. I love Cherokee. That's just a cool, like, that's a cool area, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot going on with, like, sort of these alternative rooms besides the Funny Bone. Now we got two Funny Bones, but... Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on in these more alternative rooms where people can do stuff, or these rock, like you said, Firebird. They've been doing a ton of comedy lately with kind of one night stuff with guys.
They bring great guys in, you know. So bare knuckle comedy guys are great. Yeah. They've been doing great stuff. They do show, and like there's shows at like Blueberry Hill, Duck Room, and Elvis Room over there.
Yeah.
Like, do you guys feel, you know, because like I left, like I said, you know, I've just. My only experience of St. Louis comedy since I've started is what I'm able to, like, immerse myself in when I'm in for a couple days, you know, or whatever. Like, where do you... I'm so curious of, like... Am I naive to think that there wasn't this sort of scene 10 years ago? I feel like there wasn't.
The only one that I remember, and I can't talk for now because Shane, like, I've told everybody, I'm from Wentzville, but, like, I don't go anywhere hardly ever just because I get home from work and I hang out with the kids and stuff. But from what I remember, I just remember being the funny bone.
And that was it.
UFC, yeah. And now, just from who we've spoke with, and not just even comedy, music-wise, there's venues and just everything that are coming up that are just opening up. Because, again, in music-wise, I just remember it being, like, the pageant, like, the creepy crawl and maybe one or two other spots. But now there's just all sorts of places. It just seems like from a creative stance, St. Louis is really starting to kind of pick it up and open some spaces up for comedy and music.
Yeah, and improv too. Yeah. You know, it seems to be like, I want more improv in the city.
Yeah.
You get a lot of people that went to Chicago, studied, and then kind of came back and brought, you know, their passion with them back here, which is great.
Yeah.
And I just, go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, I think there was some of that, like, you know, whatever, years ago. I mean, like, we've had a lot of great comics come out of the St. Louis, but I don't think we've ever really had, like, the community, like, in a sense that we're, but now we're kind of embracing the stand-up, the sketch, the improv, the, and all of it. And, like, there's a lot of people kind of mass collaborating and bringing up, you know, building comedy in the scene here.
It does need to be, like, there's always, you know, sometimes there is this war between stand-up and improv, you know, or this, like, you know, resentment between the two. And I do think it benefits, when you support each other, I do think it's more supportive for the comedy scene in general. And a lot of, especially you people who do both, you know, and kind of like do or sort of like marry the, it sometimes it's tough to kind of have a stand-ups and improv in the same show. There's a weird, sometimes it's just a little disjointed, you know, but sometimes you can have a stand-up host, you know, an improv show and stuff. And, and there's a lot of, we used to do a show. There's a show called Clusterfuck that I do in New York that is, like, where I get, like, four of my stand-up buddies and four of my improv friends, and each person, I get a suggestion from the audience, I improvise a stand-up off of that suggestion, then a stand-up or an improv buddy will come up, will improvise off of my monologue. Then I'll go to the side, and my improv buddy will have to try to do stand-up. And then he does stand-up for a couple of minutes. And then I'll have a stand-up buddy come up, and then the three of us improvise off that person's stand-up. And then my stand-up buddy doesn't do improv, but just improvise with us. Then he'll go up and do stand-up, and then another improviser. And so you go back and forth, improv, stand-up, and everybody has to do both arts. And then by the time it's over, there's like nine people on stage. That's where the clusterfuck comes from. And it's everybody doing the thing that they do, but also doing what they don't do. And it's so fun, like just like a mashup, too, where we got to get the two worlds and put them together. And like, because we're all fighting the same war.
Right. You know? If one person gets exposure, it's going to bring it to everybody. I think just having a community that encourages everybody, if one person or a couple people start to get exposure, it's only going to help, you know.
You make videos and you do, like, you know, the bare knuckle comedy guys do the that elevator talk show, or Fright Elevator talk show, and then like and having each other on the podcast and stuff, and like it does help the whole community and get the word out of all the stuff. And I just remember, like, because I do remember when I would come back from Chicago, you know, for Thanksgiving or over the summer and stuff, I would like troll the internet and like look for, you know, even like I'd be looking for open mics and stuff.
Yeah.
I think I would like find one at McGurk's that was like a music / comedy, you know, it was like
a talent show
or something. I had a hard time finding, you know, any sort of like back of the bar alternative black box theater comedy, you know, anything that wasn't, I had a hard time finding anything. And I didn't know if I was just not looking in the right places or if it just wasn't here. And I feel like now when I come back, it's like very easy to find, which makes, if you're looking for it, which makes me think it's just getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah, there's almost an open mic every night of the week now.
That's awesome. That's great. I mean, to be able to go up, you know, because sometimes you do go to these cities, and there is a comedy scene there, but they have like the one mic. You know, they have that one mic all week, and then that's it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then they got to wait a whole other week to go up in front of those same people and tell the same jokes that the same people heard last week. And it's, you know, you're like, I love your ambition, and it's by no fault of their own, you know, it's hard to just get, a scene doesn't get created overnight.
Yeah.
But it's I just love seeing, you know, more and more every time I come back.
Yeah.
Wentzville. What are they? Is there any shows out there?
No,
I don't think there are anything.
Cover bands. That's all we get in Wentzville.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it.
But I mean, again, with it growing, I wouldn't be surprised to see something. But I think most of it stays around St. Charles and kind of this area. It seems like. But it's expanding, I think, and especially now with, I think social media and stuff has a part of it where everybody can promote things so much easier and you can get the word out. That, I mean, I think it's just gonna. I think it's gonna grow, and I think it will eventually make its way. Maybe not directly to Wentzville. I mean, is O'Fallon?
There's a show in O'Fallon that Sean's been trying to do, and he brings out some of the guys, and they. They do like a month, or I think it's a monthly show out there. And
yeah.
So they're trying to bring more to suburbs and things, but
I mean, yeah, even
it's almost like you have to train people, like, you know, it's in a sense, like to what is comedy and what is this, and so I don't know.
I do think the neighborhood does have something to do with that too. Like, if you know, I mean, even in West County, where you know where we're at right now, like this De Pere area, I mean, we're sort of. In between De Pere, Manchester, and Baldwin right here.
Yeah.
Like, nor do I ever see a great alt comedy scene rising in the suburbs out here, you know?
Yeah.
They sort of need to breed in, like, places that sort of have a lot of people, like, going, you know, like the Central West End and Cherokee Street and just those, like...
A little more destination places of,
to
be there, you know, instead of... I think it's hard to say, let's go to Wentzville and... See a comic show, you know, if there's more kind of make an experience out of it, then I think helps. Yeah. But
also have just the residents of the surrounding areas be the type of people that are you sort of do need like sort of like 20 somethings living in lofts and you know, just kind of like going out every night in the neighborhood to kind of walk over and check that thing out or a quick drive or whatever.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, you know, I mean, out here, it's like, everyone's got a family.
Yeah.
And they don't go out that often. And when they do, you know, it's, they're not like watching YouTube video. They're not like, they're just not in the mindset of like, oh, I wish there was like an alt, you know, they're not seeing rock bands.
Yeah.
You know, they're not seeing like improv shows and stuff, but maybe... But I think they are going to start going to the places where they are happening, you know, where they are like, you know, there's people in like the Loop is a perfect example of like people who live in that area. They kind of walk them and support that area. And then the people in the suburbs will start driving down there and seeing the stuff that's happening in the Duck Room. And like, man, that whole and that, like Firebird area, right, which is right over by City Museum, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, that's such a very, like, the people who live over there seem to be very art-minded. Is that right?
Yeah,
is that
have that type a of lot town? More, like, culture, I guess, in a sense, too.
They're more into, like, checking comedy shows out, like, every week, you know? Like, that's so awesome to, like, because, you need comedians. You also need a fan base of people. And, like, once the word out, because, like, my buddies that, like, don't, you know, they think it's a comedy club and that's it. And then when you show them this other world, they get excited and be like, this is awesome.
Yeah. Right.
This is way better than that shitty fucking show I saw at that club, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this is fucking great. And those guys were awesome. And I saw, like, seven different people. And, and I saw a hilarious sketch. Like, people are like, I didn't know I could see sketch not on Saturday Night Live.
Right.
You can
go
see sketch shows. You can go see live improv. And as people start figuring out that that's the deal, you know, that's it's so awesome for St. Louis.
Yeah. Well, so you're on Twitter, I know that, right?
I decided to just get on Twitter yesterday. I already have 6,000 followers.
Well, that's impressive. You know.
All spam bots.
I will say the picture of the penis was a great shot.
Thank you.
Really got a lot of views in the hashtag. Huge.
Yeah,
good,
so. You know, it's so funny. I had this dick pic I've been sitting on for a while. And I was like, how do I monetize this?
Yeah, I need to make this. This isn't going to be just anybody. This has got to go something special. So, bam, Twitter happened. So what's the Twitter handle? Is it just,
N-I-C-K, Nick.
That spells Nick, yeah. Sweet.
Vatterott, V-A-T-T-E-R-O-T-T, yes, like the college.
Damn.
As you know, the joke is, that's the joke.
I was gonna ask you how much money you made from Vatterott.
You know what's funny? When I was in high school, people were like, Vatterott, so you must be, like, rich, dude. Yeah, I'm rich, because you know how your dad's third cousin gives you all that money?
Yeah. It's a good life. Sweet. Yeah, and then 27th this Saturday. Yeah, Saturday is Shameless Grounds. Be doing a show there. And then the album is For Amusement Only, which again is great. I've listened
great
to
album.
It twice.
Oh, thank you guys. Yeah.
The commentary. I don't know if you can find it on CD, but you can definitely find it on iTunes, Spotify.
If you find it on CD, let me know. Because I'd love
a copy.
I'd love to
have
really a
good.
Copy of it.
That'd be great. Well, you got anything else?
No.
Sweet. Well, dude, it. Blast chatting with you and appreciate you hanging out while you're in town. And happy holidays for...
Happy Hollandaise.
Happy Hollandaise. Yes.
Happy Hollandaise to everyone. I don't know why he's so sick.
That's
just, I don't know why.
It's cold season.
He's not going to make it to 2015.
Yeah. And see, he's got a chance, though. There's only a few days left. He's so
no,
cool. And he's
let's
done.
Be real.
He's dead. We lost him.
The way I smoke every night.
He's gone.
Yeah, little Timmy, why do you smoke so much? I don't know. I mean, it was, you know, I live in a...
It helps just, my breathing.
It helps my breathing. It hurts not to smoke at this point.
Yeah. I feel bad when I do.
Oh, goodness. We'll save trips back to Brooklyn, too, when you head back there. And best of luck on the upcoming project when it comes out.
I hope it does. Yeah. I want that sweet, sweet money. And watch the Nick Vatterott show. I know it's a podcast.
Yeah, watch it.
Just eat some acid and try to see the sound come out of your speakers.
Just turn on your Windows Media Player and hit the visuals, and you'll be set.
That's actually true. It actually, much like Pink Floyd and Dark Side of the Moon, it syncs up to your screensaver no matter what your screensaver is.
Every B, it'll hit a bump like a bass. Sweet. Awesome. Episode 37, Nick Vatterott. Man, thanks for coming on, and I appreciate you hanging out.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Nick.
That's a wrap.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock, 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 rock,